This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor. On call every Saturday afternoon at 5. This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Today, we welcome a very special guest to talk about the effects of social media and cell phone use in children and adolescents. As with any new invention or practice, it takes time to learn the benefits and risks, sometimes decades. In the case of social media and texting, cell phone use, people can communicate quickly, contact one person or hundreds of people at one time. You can learn your family heritage with a click. You can go online and learn how to play an instrument. Our guest is Dr. Desmond Upton Patton. He's a PhD and has a master's in social work. He's a professor of psychiatry at the Perelman School of Medicine. He's the Schwartz University professor in the School of Social Policy and Practice at the Annenberg School for Communication and at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Welcome, Desmond.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Thank you. So we realized that with any life is a balance. There are positives and negatives to just about any topic. What are some of the concerns that you and other experts have about the effects of social media and texting with children and adolescents?
Well, it's a great question. And I come at this as a social worker and as a gun violence researcher. So I came into this space really understanding how young people were using social media in particular in ways that led to bullying, that led to gun violence, and that in some instances will lead to death. And so I have began to understand social media as this new neighborhood where the same things that are happening in our physical neighborhoods can also happen in our digital neighborhoods. Now, as I have spent time with young people over the last 12, 13 years, I've also grown to learn other things that are happening to young people. Things like body shaming, things like sex and drug trafficking that may also happen through communication, through direct messaging, third parties that are trying to sell your children things they are not ready to buy. So there are lots of different forms of communication, uses of social media through going live, through the use of emoji, that I think are raising some concerns. Over the last year, we've also had some of these concerns come to the forefront from the Surgeon General, who was very much concerned about the mental health of young people. How they're spending time may exacerbate anxiety or depression or suicidal ideation. And so these types of concerns are really becoming more of a national conversation than ever before.
And Desmond, you mentioned so many different topics, each of which could really deserves an entire show. I mean, even as you say, gun violence, because I really think in my own humble non-psychologist, non-social worker mind, that I watch people, and whether you're getting your brakes fixed or your gallbladder removed or information about the traffic patterns, clickety-click, people click, and are making clicky decisions and are becoming a bit robotic. So if children are exposed to this all the time, or they're playing video games, well, I don't know that that's a fair comparison, but it becomes easier to just by impulse say, yeah, I'll join that website or that chat, and they get pulled into conversations that can be so dangerous for them. And you say it so well. I mean, even the fact that guns and violence, how about suicide? That in itself, and it's probably somewhat different from adult suicide, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, so I think a part of the challenge is twofold. I think we have this amazing and robust space where you can get so much information, and yet oftentimes it is coming at you so quickly, and you don't have a moment to actually think through carefully what you're receiving or have the ability to fact check what you're seeing. And so one of the challenges that I think is something that we could work on and potentially change is that we need more physicians and mental health practitioners that are working with tech companies to make sure that we're getting evidence-based information presented to young people. And so if your child is going to be online, we need to first understand what they're experiencing, who they're talking to, and what types of information are they receiving, and is that information actually helpful and healthy for your children?
Good point, because we made a list of things. We had a great conversation the other day. I learned so much from you. And we're going to use our last segment to talk about the positives of social media and some of your great ideas to make it a healthy place, a place that people can enjoy and engage. But, you know, we talk about the extreme suicide and gun violence, but in between, physical violence is, we can see it, but what we can't see is, number one, we talk about isolation with COVID. Long before COVID, this kind of behavior was separating our children and adults. But so less face-to-face contact with your peers and your buddies. They're not hanging out at the mall, or they're not playing in the schoolyard, learning how to, you know, the conflict mediation thing, learning how to settle their own struggles naturally. It's these text wars. And when you get a text, we talked about this the other day, if somebody sends you a text and it says nice hair, you don't know if it means nice hair or nice hair. You don't know. There's that lack of inflection can cause misunderstandings, hurt feelings. You don't get to see the full body language and facial expression, at least in a text, maybe with Zoom like we're doing. And that constant comparison to the perfect images, none of us can, you know, have that perfect figure in the bikini, or, you know, the perfectly chiseled face, or whatever is being put up there. And these kids are not, that those formative years of adolescence, they're trying to find themselves. Where do I fit in? Yep. The pressure. What do you say about all that?
Yeah, you know, this is interesting, because this is exactly what I hear from young people. So I spent a couple of years in Chicago interviewing young people that self-identified as being gang involved. And I asked them about, you know, how do you know that something is threatening or problematic? And they said, it's really about who you know and understanding who that person is, based on your connection, your proximity to them, but also being able to locate them based on neighborhood and community. All of those contextual factors would help a young person make a decision on how they would interpret a post. And so if you were a friend and you made a comment that might look aggressive based on the language that's being displayed, the interpretation would not be taken as being aggressive, because I know you. I know that you're not trying to harm me. But in some instances, that distal factor creates more anxiety and allows for so many different narratives to build about how you might interpret a post. And so that connection is really important. But this is interesting, because the whole idea and the hope of social media is that it would bring us together, that it would create stronger connections. But in some instances, it is not true connections. It is performative connections or false connections, which as human beings, we know, we get, we understand, and we react accordingly. And so I think we have to be very careful about thinking that social media is the only way in which we can build strong connections, because our young people know, and they're able to discern between real connections and fake connections.
Well, you know, you brought up an important point the other day. I think a lot of people are compelled, if they want to, you know, like, have a good day, exclamation point, or emojis. And emojis can be a way of, you know, you're in a crowd and you see somebody wearing a particular type of clothing or not. It's a flag to say, I think this or that. Yeah.
Yes.
So you were saying how some young people use emojis as a signal for I care about you or I don't like you.
Emojis
can not be the obvious. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, I think that emojis can be their own language. And I think that we have grown to learn that it's not just emoji. We have memes now and so many different graphic forms of communication that allow us to be our most expressive selves. And in some instances, they allow us to communicate things that are hard to communicate or that we don't feel comfortable communicating. But again, that communication is always wrapped within the context of your locality and who you are and your culture and your race and your gender and all your intersectional identities. And so that's why I think it's really important that if you're going to talk about emojis in the context of youth mental health, that you really need deep local expertise and insights to make sure that what you see is truly what is trying to be communicated.
And you're right. That's where teachers, parents, physicians come into play and say, it'd be great to have programs to say, you're just becoming familiar with social media. Did you know that if you like this article or this, that people can, maybe you find it interesting, but you don't agree with it. There's not enough space to nuance that. And people can I associate you with that and say, I'll never talk to her again. So, and the other thing, and I think this applies to people of all ages. You see people that are absolutely glued to their cell phones. You'll be standing in line to pay for your groceries or something. I do self-checkout, but you know, you're waiting for an airplane or whatever it is. And phone. And some of it's texting, some of it's just reading or whatever. But that nonstop texting, sharing, scrolling, trolling, that habit leaves no time for self-reflection. You know, that some of the best time for me to think is when I'm waiting in line and I think, okay, let me think what I'm going to, you know, make for dinner this week. Or did I remember to call my sister? I know she's worried about something. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
That empty space. So for children, that's the time for imagination. When they're riding in the back seat of the car, counting mailboxes or the games we used to play. Did you see a license plate from Missouri or New Jersey?
Yep.
Right? I mean, that in itself.
And I think what you're acknowledging is the effect social media and emerging technologies have had on creativity and how we connect and understand ourselves as human beings, right? And so before, when we were bored, we would read a book or we would go for a walk or go play with other kids outside. And that play would allow people to be imaginative and creative. And what I'm concerned about is that now our forms of distraction are almost solely digital. And there can be creativity that happens in that space, to be clear. But I wonder to what extent we are missing out on the fullness of our ability to be imaginative if we only find technology as our way of being able to quell our boredom.
What a good way to say it, if our biggest, most common distraction is going digital. And the other thing I'll say quickly, we have about 30 seconds. People who portray themselves as familiar. Hey, you know, do you want to try this? God help the poor people who make Skittles, because we saw that people bring fentanyl into the country. It looks exactly like the Skittles package, or not just Skittles, other ones, but that left such an imprint, it could hurt their business. But you have to be able to say to the children, make sure you don't take a package of candy ever from a stranger. We learned that when we were little. But when they connect with these familiar, not so much, people, that leads to trafficking, kidnapping, try this drug, look at pornography.
Absolutely.
Let's pick this up in the next segment with Dr. Desmond Patton.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor with our guest, Dr. Desmond Patton, professor of psychiatry at the Perelman School of Medicine and professor in the School of Social Policy and Practice at the Annenberg School for Communications and CHOP. Desmond, we were talking about some of the negatives of social media and cell phone use, which we have to address. You have to know your enemy so you choose the right ammunition. And we know there are many wonderful positives that we'll get to in the next segment. But I wanted to also mention of the things we mentioned of concern, some of the physical challenges that we see on TikTok. I saw one, and maybe you did too, pouring cough syrup on raw chicken and eating it. What? I mean, how could that be tasty? Or is it, you know, kids love truth or dare, that kind of thing. But raw chicken in itself, I'm not a fan of salmonella as a GI doctor. But I think the other scary one that seemed to ebb and flow as a fad is the blackout challenge, where kids hold their breath. Do they think they're going to get high when they're hypoxic, when their oxygen levels drop? I think that's the theory behind it, that they're going to get high, but not if they die.
So I don't think the actual act is the thing that is exciting to young people. I think it is the 15 minutes of fame that is a big kind of generator of excitement and interest and connectivity to other peers. And so these challenges are not new. I think since we've had social media, we've had a number of challenges. Some positive, you might remember the ice bucket challenge where folks were raising money for ALS.
Yes.
That was a positive challenge. And in the same breath, yeah, we have challenges that are really about growing audiences. We have a new career of content creation where if I can create content that gets you to keep coming back to my page, then I make money. And so in some instances, and this happens a lot for teenagers, I can create something that doesn't make any sense to me, but will make people watch what I'm doing, and I'll do that, and it becomes viral. And it becomes a viral sensation. So these types of things, we have to have conversations with young people about this, about the celebrity moment. And is it real? And is it something that you actually need to be engaging with?
Well, you bring up, again, so many important points, because I think ever since women, when we're joining more in the workforce, we have nannies and we're going to such great lengths to protect our children in the physical world, but now we have to make sure we're protecting them in the cyber world, yeah?
Absolutely.
You bring up another important point about drawing attention. And you're right, it's just about fitting in and I'm cool and I need the respect. Last week we had Dr. Steve Leffon, your colleague, and talked about violence prevention. Take one of those kids who seems to act out and embrace them and say, let's take all that negative energy and make it positive and get up in the classroom and say, here's a positive way, and they'll get their respect that way. It's a great switcheroo that gives that kid respect that they're... But lastly, you mentioned influencers. I read a story recently about a mom who took her daughter out to the mall and they stopped at a makeup store, and the girl filled a filled her basket with nine, to match her name, $900 worth of cosmetics.
Wow.
And her mother said, not a penny over 500. I said, holy shnikes, what are you saying? Because these little girls are now influencers and money and fame. So parents, how do you prepare parents, or how can we prepare children, help parents prepare their children for their digital lives? I love the way you say that.
You know, I think that there are a number of things that parents can do to help prepare their children for a digital life. Number one, I think this is probably, for me, the most important one, is education and dialogue. I think we need to have open conversations. Parents need to have open conversations with their children about the benefits and risk of digital technologies. They need to bring social media and emerging technologies into the everyday conversation. They need to know who their children are talking to. They need to know mm-hmm. what platforms they are using. They need to understand the features that they're using and how they're using those features. They need to know what makes them upset and what makes them happy on these platforms. But my biggest point is that having holistic conversations about your child's digital life, I think, are as important as their physical life. I think parents need to have trustworthy conversations with their children around setting boundaries that include establishing clear rules about screen time and what is appropriate content. I think parents, I think this is another really important thing, need to also model that behavior and demonstrate positive digital habits. And so if you're on your phone until 1 o'clock at night, and you answer your phone the first thing when you get up in the morning, you know, your children will see that. And I understand that we all have different jobs, different careers that require attention. That's completely understandable. But also, you know that your children are watching you. And so thinking about how you want to model that behavior, I think, is going to be important. And I think I would just end with, you know, privacy awareness and making sure you're having conversations with your children about the importance of privacy and protecting their personal information. So what information are they sharing out about who they are and where they live and their telephone number and that kind of thing?
So many good points. I mean, even just the idea of sharing what, to whom are you sending your age, your birthday, where you're going to be? Oh, my family's going on vacation this week. So they know your house is empty, but that's a whole lot less scary than thinking, oh, I walk on Fifth Street and I turn on Chestnut Street to get to school. Then somebody knows you're at school at 10 after. All those things, not necessary. You know, we talked the other day, when I exchange my emails at work, I keep them bare bones. See you at the meeting. Yep. Yes. I don't even say have a good day. Happy birthday. Nothing. See you at 3 p.m. Thank you.
Yep.
Because as you say, certain words trigger people to think you think a certain way or whatever. But with children, what age would you say you allow children to start to dabble with an iPad? Like toddlers with games, maybe. Should parents limit that exposure time as well? Because you don't want that device to be a babysitter.
Yeah, this is a really important question, and I think one that is a little complicated. I'll have to say I'm not an expert on toddlers and babies, but I think what I have learned from colleagues is that it's generally advisable to limit screen time for toddlers and to focus on interactive, non-digital play. I think that that's an evidence-based observation that most of us are aware of. But I think in terms of as we continue to go up in age, I think parents need to tap into their understanding of the maturity of their child with thinking about whether or not to allow them to either get a cell phone or to engage in social media. Most social media companies have this entry point of age 13, but 13 for some young people looks different than for others. And so I don't think because your child is 13 that you should feel obligated to allow them to join social media. You know your child's maturity level. Please tap into that. I think other things to think about if you're going to start early, which I understand for a lot of parents who live complicated and busy lives, the tool is a supportive tool. I think we need to have that understanding and awareness. Think about controlled exposure. What sites can your child go to and how long can they stay on those sites? And then if you're going to allow your child to begin to play around with emerging tech tools early, think about supervised usage. And so using a digital device for learning, I think, can be really exciting. And so if you have a babysitter coming in and you want to hand them a tool, make sure that they are looking at that tool together and spending that time together.
So if a child is being bullied, and a lot of times children are ashamed when they get themselves into a conundrum or they feel threatened, or if the person who's torturing them, be it another, you know, young person or one of these familiar strangers, says, don't tell anybody. What should a parent look for if a child is being bullied or developing anxiety, depression? I mean, that's the more common.
I think this is such an important question and one that I want parents to really be thinking about. I think number one is behavioral changes, you know, be alert to changes in one's behavior, such as withdrawal or mood swings or decline in academic performance. So if your child was once an A-plus student, but now they're a B, even if they're now a B, B-minus student, that shift is really important to understand. I think looking for any physical symptoms, watch for signs of stress or distress, headaches or stomach aches or sleep disturbances, or if they were once engaging in joyful activities and now they are withdrawing from those joyful activities, asking why, understanding that. And then I think thinking about open communication, I think we have to maintain these open lines of communication and provide a supportive environment where a child feels safe discussing these behavioral shifts with you, which I think is oftentimes a problem because a child may feel if I tell you, then you're going to start to restrict me or things will change in my life. I think it really has to come from a place of love and care and understanding.
And again, you're wise to say it's different in every situation. We're talking about general guidelines.
For sure.
Because it's no longer the days of Beaver Cleaver where this is at dinner time for everyone, because if you want your child to succeed in a sport, you know, no longer is it just the fun and learning to be on a team and that family feel of there is no I in team kind of thing.
Right.
It's you got to go to camp in the summer. You have to play the sport all year round. And so it disrupts our dinner hours, et cetera. And that's where you see your children's little faces. That's where they're stirring their favorite mashed potatoes instead of eating them. What's the matter, honey? You know, you're looking them right in the eyes. You're not texting them or calling them. And dinner hour is so sacred. We tried so hard because, you know, we all have different schedules. And if the children got home before I did or the reverse, I'd put out a tray of veggies and say, start your homework. When Dad gets here, we'll sit down together.
Exactly.
Carpool. I used to be driving. I'd hear, you know, little Lindsay say to my son Andrew, did Johnny push you today? Yeah. But if I were to ask Andrew, how was your day? Fine. Who'd you play with? Nobody. What happened? Nothing. Mm-hmm. So you have to take those opportunities. Put your own cell phone down. You're in a restaurant or a burger place and you see parents and kids on their cell phones. It's not working. It's an easy trap.
Absolutely.
Let's take a little break.
Absolutely.
And I'll try to go to the voice store and hear about this week's Real Champion. For your real champion, I call this segment the Star Spangled Banner. The War of 1812 was the first large-scale test of the American Republic on the world stage. British soldiers invaded American soil, captured Washington, D.C., and even burned the White House. For the first time in our nation's history, we declared war on a foreign nation, Great Britain. A young lawyer named Francis Scott Key risked his own life sailing into the Baltimore Harbor to rescue a doctor friend whom the British accused of aiding in the arrest of British soldiers. Following the mission, Key witnessed the 25-hour British attack on Fort McHenry. During that rainy day and night, the fort's small storm flag, 17 by 25 feet, continued to fly. But on the next morning, the smaller flag was lowered and the larger garrison flag was raised, 30 by 42 feet. Inspired by victory and the sight of the large U.S. flag triumphantly waving o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave, the amateur poet was stirred by emotion and penned the words that became our national anthem. 1899, the U.S. officially adopted the Star-Spangled Banner, and in 1916, President Woodrow Wilson ordered that it be played at military and other appropriate occasions. 2 years later, played at the seventh inning stretch of the 1918 World Series. But other evidence shows it was performed as early as 1897 at opening day of baseball season in Philadelphia. By 1931, Congress officially declared it as our national anthem. Since the end of World War II, it's opened NFL games, later national hockey, soccer, baseball, and basketball games. After September 11, Queen Elizabeth broke tradition and allowed our anthem to be performed at Buckingham Palace in support of Britain's ally. The next day, again at St. Paul's Cathedral, the Queen joined in singing the anthem, an unprecedented occurrence. With its wide range, the song can be especially difficult to sing, even for professionals. But most remarkable is the emotion that the words elicit. It reminds me to be grateful to all those who have served, including my dad, my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, and my nephew. We close the champion segment today with a very special rendition. The voice is that of a 14-year-old girl who began singing Big Five games at the Palestra at age 9, then for the 76ers, the Phillies, Kick Soccer, and multiple occasions, including the Republican National Convention, over 20 times a year, even through college. Now grown with a family of her own, she always considered it an honor to sing the anthem as a proud American. Why is this my personal favorite? Because it's the voice of my baby girl, Victoria Antoinette Teresa. And now we invite you to listen as we all salute the star-spangled banner, your real champion.
Broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. O'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming. And the rockets red condemned, the bombs bursting in them. Still there, oh, they just let us bang on the lion way. For the land of the free and the home of the brave. Today's
edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much and so many important features of being aware of social media and cell phone use for children and adolescents from our guest, Dr. Desmond Patton from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and the Annenberg School of Communication and Perelman School of Medicine. He wears many hats and wears them well. Desmond, we were talking about some of the ways that parents can prepare their children for their digital lives is the formal way of saying help keep their children in a happy place. Use social media for the positives that we're going to talk about, but protect them from dangerous or sites and information that can harm them and make them feel bullied or in danger.
For sure.
One of the things we didn't even get to is adding the icing of AI. I mean, if we, you know, maybe it was like 2 years ago we saw on TV, and it's come up since then. I think Bruce Willis was just diagnosed with dementia, and they wanted him to agree that they could use his facial image in future movies. And you know that's already happening. People are using people's faces and putting them on their bodies, and ay, ay, ay. Where does that fit in the future? I guess we don't know.
I think this is a really important topic because there are lots of things that are designed as games or fun kind of activities for you to do on social media that are actually about collecting your data, right? And so, you know, for a time, there were all these games that wanted you to see what your face would look like as a baby, or to see what your face would look like as an older adult. This is also collecting data about your face. And I think you should ask yourself, do you want your child's biometric information to be collected? These types of things are happening all the time and are growing and growing. And so I think being aware of AI contraptions that are designed as games that are about collecting your data, I think should be at the top of parents' concerns. Now, you may opt in because it could be fun. It is fun for some people.
Yeah.
But you, I think, as an informed citizen, should be aware of when your personhood is now a data collection tool.
What a great point. If people don't hear anything else today, I know myself, I don't see them as often as I used to, but I used to get emails and they would say, here's a thought for the day, or let's all pray for this or that. Say the prayer and pass it on to 12 people. And you're right. I don't answer them. I never did, because they're collecting hundreds of emails. And as you say, they know to whom you're connected and allegiances and affinity groups and all that kind of thing. How about when you're looking at your own emails and up pops an ad for blue shirts? Why? But you know what? Stop it. Because I don't need a blue shirt today. But maybe 2 years ago, I bought a blue shirt for my son's birthday. Whatever, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. But I love the way you say parents shouldn't be scared into thinking one way about social media. How can they think of it as an environment, a place of joy, imagination, where kids can find community?
Absolutely. I think that social media and cell phones have numerous positive aspects, especially when we think about these platforms, not just as environments, but as vibrant population spaces. I think first, they offer a space for children and adolescents to find joy, imagination, and community. But what we should know is that kids are already doing remarkable things on social media, from creating content that inspires others to engage in social media, social justice movements. I think these platforms can provide a sense of belonging, especially if you're from a marginalized identity group. You can then find spaces where you can be your full self.
Yeah.
And that's really important. But I think, you know, what I'm seeing, especially over the last year, I am concerned for parents, is I think you're getting a lot of information that's telling you that social media is going to ruin your child, that you are going to have all these horrible things happen to your children. And I want to be clear, yes, there are really bad things
on
social media.
There are some pitfalls, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are some pitfalls, and you can prepare for them by having open dialogue, by being a parent who is listening to your children about their social media life, and helping them to think about alternative uses of social media that can be really helpful. And so I think when a child who is isolated in their physical school space can find a community online of people that are similar, that want to do similar fun things, that's a really positive thing. And children and young people are already doing that. Help them do that more as well.
Yeah. Give them a little direction, because as we say, life is a balance, and too much of anything, too much of sports, you know, get overuse injury, or, hey, you're going to be in summer camps, you're going to do that one sport 24/7. And although sports can be a huge positive in anyone's life, especially a growing child, there's common sense involved.
Absolutely.
But what people don't know, what you don't know can hurt you. So we're just asking parents to become familiar. And at the end, we're going to talk about a website. Hopefully the people can learn more about your research and know. I'm sure the CDC and different websites talk about safe spaces for kids. I know I read about a book that came out recently, The Anxious Generation by John Haidt, mm-hmm. one of your fellow psychologists at NYU. And just like you said, he comes up with some practical, as your colleague Steve Leff said last week, how do we not just talk about these ideals, but what are some practical ways to protect our kids and make it a positive experience?
Yeah, and I think first is listening to what they're already doing online. And so I think parents should really sit down and have conversations around what are some fun things that you're doing online these days? What are your friends doing online? And really trying to understand that. And then I think figuring out and adapting a plan that works for you and your household. And I think oftentimes parents are getting flushed with so much information that feels quite general. But I think what you can do is take the parts that land for you and your family and adapt them for your home. A really good example is that in some homes, WhatsApp is a lifeline to family members that live in other countries. And so telling folks to not connect with their grandparents that they may see once a year or once every other year is not going to be helpful in some homes, right? That's an important communication tool. And so I think understanding that balance and figuring out what works best for your family is great. I think I hear a lot of parents asking about features online that they should be aware of. And I think that you should have a conversation with your children about how they use social media. One feature that comes up a lot is going live, right? And so in some spaces and places, going live can be fun. It allows you to build an audience. For some folks, it allows them to build a career. It allows them connectivity, creating community and network. Those are really positive things. Then, in some of the neighborhoods that I work in, going live can be used as a tool for aggression. Someone can be filming themselves in a rival neighborhood or using a live feature to taunt or bully folks or to record fights. You want to understand both use cases of live before you...
I'm sorry, Desmond. So going live, I'm not sure everybody knows what that feature is.
Yeah, so
it's kind of like a Zoom.
Going live is a feature that is probably on most social media platforms. It's essentially allowing you to use your camera to instantaneously go live, to be in community with folks like a Zoom chat feature, if you will.
Yeah. No, because you see it on TV and you see somebody narrating a scene or a car accident or something, and you think
absolutely
it's good and bad because it's live and it's real, but it's unfiltered. So, but you're right. So it could be good or bad. There's talk. I mentioned John Haidt says some four very practical. Maybe no smartphones until age 16. As you mentioned earlier, some platforms you have to be at least 13. But for younger children, give them a phone that allows them to call home or text mom and say, school got out early, can you pick me up? Really basic, safe communication I'm sick at school or whatever. No, you don't want them texting in school, but you know what I'm saying. Because you know what's interesting? When my kids were going through high school, if they'd say, we're going to John's for a sleepover, say, okay. If they let me know that you got there after the basketball game.
Exactly.
In the old days, they'd pick up the house phone and it would say, John Smith's house. Then they're calling from their text phone. They could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that took away that parental, ability to really track their safety. But so what about the idea of not giving younger kids a smartphone? They don't need to be, trolling and scrolling and all that kind of thing, right? Go to school,
I think it is another example of something that I think you have to determine for your family and your children. I think generally, having a phone, an old flip phone, is just fine for your child.
Right.
The ability
exactly.
to text you and to answer a phone call is enough information. That's for sure. Now, if we think about families that have children with various forms of disabilities, having a smartphone could be extremely helpful in some scenarios, right? And so I think thinking about to what extent does having a smartphone support the development of an autistic child? Again, I think a parent would have to determine that for themselves.
Yeah, and that's probably a skew.
Exactly, for sure.
But I guess, too, I know there's talk about some schools going phone-free during school hours, which probably isn't a bad idea. You have laptops, you have computers at school. We don't want you distracted by somebody in the fourth row sending a message to their friend in the second row and the people in between seeing the face, all those things that You know, in the old days, we used to write a note and pass and get in trouble, stand in the corner.
You know, I've gotten this question before, and then I have the parents that have children who are in schools where there was a mass shooting, and their only form of communication to the world was through their smartphone when the school shooting was happening. And so it became a lifeline, a communication tool. So I generally agree that I think that social media and phones in schools are a distraction. And then I think we need to think through those examples when they can be helpful. And I think, again, schools and parents need to have those conversations.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want a child who's in a situation where they feel threatened that they can't communicate home.
I wonder if the way around that would be to have a basket in the front of the room where you drop your phone, and then it would be, I don't know. That's a tough one. We'll have to get more creative.
You know, when you go to the theater, they give you those little pockets where you can drop your phone in. You can't access it until after the show. We could bring things like that into play as well.
Yeah, good point. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, our wrap up with Dr. Desmond Patton.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We call this segment Your Weekly Prescription. We've been so fortunate to have Dr. Desmond Patton. We've learned a lot. We've had a lot of food for thought, Desmond. Social media, cell phone use, texting, all these forms of techno talk is what I call it, really have so many wonderful benefits. AI should be an interesting sprinkle in the mix here, but what's your take-home message for parents and younger people who are listening?
I think the most important thing is for children and their parents to be engaged in open dialogue around social media. And I think what we need to all understand, social media is life. I'm going to say that one more time. Social media is life. It's not this virtual thing that's off to the side. It is integrated in how many of us live our lives, and especially your children. It is where a lot of their development is happening. A lot of their peer-to-peer connection and relationships are happening. It's how they're seeing their identity, and their identity is being reflected back to them. So understanding social media as a neighborhood, as a community, is vastly important. I also think that I want to make sure that parents know that social media is not going to be this crazy robot that's coming after your children. You can take control over your child's digital life. Understanding that your child has a digital life and that you can support that control is really important. Talk to your pediatrician and your primary care physician about your child's social media life and ask questions about things. Make sure you're looking out for any kind of behavioral changes or differences. And also uplift joy and imagination that your child may receive from social media, and figure out how to build on that and connect the digital to the physical. So if they're finding this really amazing community of folks that like to play
chess or something,
some game on social media, help them be able to build those relationships offline as well, and have this mix of both a digital and physical world, because that's exactly where our world is, and it's going to increasingly move towards as well. I think that if you want to learn more information, a place that I spend a lot of time is the Children and Screens Institute. They have workshops and researchers and lots of great insightful information. So that is a great kind of home for parents to really connect and learn from. If you want to learn more about my research, you can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Desmond Patton, or my research lab at Penn called The Safe Lab.
Okay, let's repeat that if we would, Desmond. The Children's Screen Institute?
Children's and Screens Institute.
Children's and Screens Institute. That makes sense.
Yes.
And your website is?
Safe Lab at UPenn.
Beautiful. Because, you know, again, you bring up such interesting and important issues. Art imitates life. Life imitates art. So people make TV shows or movies out of life situations, and then people watch movies and they start to dance like Elvis Presley or whoever they admire. And so there's so much positivity possible from building these communities and finding joy and learning tools, learning how to be a better cook, or as you say, bring people together in a positive way. And parents need to talk to their pediatricians, teachers, pediatricians to find out, are there signs I should watch with my child if he or she is really so preoccupied with this that they're not doing well, and we don't want them to fall on that spectrum from being anxious to depressed and hurting themselves. And lastly, parents, be better role models. If you're at the dinner table, put your phone in the backyard, look at your children, talk to your children, love your children. They're going to imitate you even if you don't realize it, right?
Absolutely.
Those websites again?
Safe Lab at UPenn, Children's and Screens Institute, and then, of course, follow the wonderful folks at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Awesome. Dr. Desmond Patton, I'm going to visit your website, Safe Lab at UPenn, because I had to be, you know, when my youngest was 3 years old and he would play Super Nintendo and he could beat me in the Ninja Turtle game, I'd say, honey, take a nap, and I would go practice so I could get better. I could never beat my three-year-old. On that note, thank you for your beautiful work and your time today. This was superb.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday at 5 p.m. here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen again to today's show or any of Art shows or Champions on Audacy.com, AUDACY.com. A special thank you to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, and we appreciate our association with Helio.com, the medical information platform that offers the latest in healthcare news and information. Visit Helio.com. Article from June 17. The Surgeon General is urging Congress to require a warning label that social media can harm the mental health of teenagers, just as we discussed in our show today. This Thursday is July 4th, and as we're ready to celebrate our independence, remember that united we stand. A very special shout out to our anthem singer in that Real Champion segment today. That star-spangled 10-year-old little girl is our daughter, Victoria, who is now grown and had a beautiful little baby boy just a few days ago. I meant to say big baby boy, weighing in at 10 pounds, 3 ounces. He must have been drinking chocolate milk. What a very special gift to our family. And as we say happy birthday to our nation, our family also says a big happy birthday to our new grandson, Patrick Stewart. And congratulations to Vicky, my son-in-law Tom, and Patrick's big brother Tommy and big sister Reese Cup. And as always, I implore you to pray for peace in our world, in our magnificent country, in our families, and each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love, always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit YourRadioDoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Audacy. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.